Exceptionally brotastic edition of the Tech Gaming Podcast, episode 10-4. I am your host. My name is Robert Desert Eagle Allen, and the hyper-dimensional yin to my yang is here. He goes by the name of Sean Nola Kirkland.
I think what you just said was racist.
Possibly. I thought you were going to say something else. And as always, clad in a criminally short sailor suit is our very own Eric Blue Swim.
Actually, today I'm wearing a Soundwave chestplate t-shirt and a Lemmy from Motorhead facial hair mustache.
Yeah, rock on. Do you have the mole?
No mole.
No mole. You're not really...
No mole, 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 mole.
So missing in action tonight, combing the mean streets of Boston for a lean green partying machine, a Samurage, who has a special message for us, right, Sean? For the listeners.
Faux Drizzle?
I guess that's it. Yeah. Why is she not here?
The car?
No, she went to go visit a friend up in Boston. And
just before St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, I guess. Well, she'll probably be there for St. Patrick's Day. I didn't even think about why she was going up to Boston.
Of course she will be. Okay. So anyway, despite her absence, I think tonight's going to be epic. What do you guys think?
I am inclined to agree.
One thing, let's try to turn your life around. Give me some game impressions, Sean.
Well, I was playing Mass Effect 2 last night, trying to finish that up so I can get into Mass Effect 3, and I get this message from my good friend Desert Eagle.
Really?
Saying, hey, what, did you give up on Hyperdimension Neptunia Mark II? So we're reviewing that. Probably going up.
I like to keep an eye on Sean when he's playing a game. I sent you a second message, but you didn't reply to.
I don't remember that part. But no, that game, it's weird because that game is everything I should hate, and I think I actually like it more than you do.
Okay.
I mean, I don't like it, but
I don't like it.
I just think I like it more than you do. I think the concept is a cool idea. You know, JRPGs have this tendency to, you know, be the same thing over and over again. They get really panned for that. And this they did do something different. Mm-hmm. It is kind of a shame that they do something different, and by that I mean like the concept of the game being this allegory for the game industry, and the idea that there's, you know, piracy is the enemy, and you're trying to teach basically your fans, that many of whom are probably pirating this game anyway, that what they're doing is wrong, and it kind of hits you really hard in the beginning. It's, you know, like, it's not so much the piracy that's wrong, it's the sort of apathetic attitude that we have towards it. You know, we don't teach anybody that's wrong. And during
the intro scroll.
This is all during the intro scroll, by the way. Yeah, they don't really back this up later on. But, I mean, they do really talk about how, you know, young kids these days don't know that piracy is wrong, and they get everything for free. So when they grow up and you tell them, you should probably be paying for this, that they don't understand why. They've been getting this for free their whole life.
Don't they also implicate the government, too? Isn't there a line or two?
The government. They basically say that there's no harsh punishment for pirates. And so that's how they set it up. And then after that, immediately after that, actually, is softcore tentacle porn.
And tentacle porn!
Really choppy frame rate and a bunch of... 14-year-old girls, and then...
They're at 18 if you look at the instruction booklet.
Sorry.
They are 18, but they look about a day over 13.
Well, in the Wikipedia thing, it said they were in 7th grade.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, but that's Wikipedia, so what do they know?
Yeah. They could be 18 in 7th grade.
they are really dumb, which I would not be surprised. And they do a lot of those things that I hate, like they call each other by pet names, which makes it really difficult to... remember who's who, because they call Nepgear Gigi and Nep.
Yep.
So you're like, which one's Gigi, which one's Nep, and which one's Nepgear? Oh, they're all the same person.
And Iffy, and yeah, they do that a lot.
How about Big Sister?
Yeah, they do. They do use Big Sister.
The consoles. There are the portables. They are what are the Game Gear, the PSP, and two twin sisters that represent the DS.
Yes, and which brings me to the other point, is that everything about that game, right down to the resolution, shows that they intended it to be a PSP game. And it's just so weird, because you're playing it and some things are too small, because you're meant to have the screen really close to your face. Some things, like the text, is too big, because it's meant to be on a small screen. Mm-hmm. And it just looks weird on a TV. And I just, the whole time I kept playing is like, man, this is really a chore to play on the PS3, but I would not mind playing this on a portable system, because it's kind of what I've gotten used to playing JRPGs on anyway.
Right. Yeah, but, I have to agree with that assessment.
Yeah. But yeah, like on the PS3, it
yeah, looks... What do you think about Idea Factory, their battle system? Because it reuses a lot of the same kind of techniques.
Well, I didn't play the first one, so I went into this kind of fresh. I actually enjoyed it. I do think it's kind of shallow, but it kind of masquerades as being deep. Like, you get all these different type of basic strikes, which, I don't know, I never really grasped. I mean, there are slight bonuses for using each one. You know, like, sometimes you'll stun someone by doing a harder attack, but it seemed like you just pick one and go with it, and that's your basic attack.
I think the whole Idea Factory concept is that there's different monsters, and you can utilize different combos, and different combos are more effective, and you have to learn the weakness of each monster. And there's probably only a dozen and a half different enemy types that are use different colors. So you'll have the Space Invader in blue or the Space Invader red, and those are different. They palette swap them, but they are different. And that's kind of one of my problems with the game, with the first game, is that they reuse assets too much. And the actual dungeons, they call them dungeons, but they're just kind of areas, are a little plain. And speaking of the frame rate, there's just something about the frame rate where there's not a lot going on screen, but the frame rate's not very good. Yeah. But my quibble, and I mentioned this to you, Sean, was in battle. I'm not sure if you experienced this. I'm trying to, initiate an attack on more than one enemy. And there's a little box that represents where you can attack. And two are just far enough apart where I can kind of get them in the box and it lights up. But then I move the stick just a tiny bit and I can only attack one.
I never came across that, but I can totally see how that would happen.
Oh, that's nuts. Because it almost feels like you're breaking the system trying to get two that aren't supposed to be, but if you just angle it just right, every once in a while that can happen. The whole idea that the system is you have a little box that you can move around to, and it's determined by, I don't know, a move stat. And you don't want your characters too close together, otherwise the enemy will, attack them all. So you want to kind of space them apart. But at the same time, you want them, fairly close together so they can gang up and launch combo attacks.
Yeah, I like the concept of it. I think the basic concept is great. I just think they didn't develop it far enough.
Execution, yeah.
Yeah. And also, we mentioned this before the show, but they throw Japanese developers in the game.
Yeah.
And Keiji Inafune he's not in every town, but he's in a lot of it. Right. Which we thought was kind of hilarious because he hates Japanese development right now.
Yeah.
And he's in, like, the most Japanese-ass game on the planet.
And he doesn't really say anything profound.
He's kind of...
Attack the torso. Attacking the torso is important. Like, he just speaks on cliches that he'd probably...
Well, that's the other thing, is they bring these developers in, and you're like, hey, that's Keiji Inafune, because I know who that is, because I'm, like, super huge nerd. But they never really get to reference who they are, because it's like Keiji Inafune. It's like, I can't say I made Mega Man because Capcom won't let me say anything about Mega Man. And then what's his name? Takeshi at the beginning. He's like, I can't say anything about Hudson, even though they don't exist anymore, because they existed when this game was in development.
He could have made a Higgins reference, no?
No, but he actually his intro. At the very beginning of the game was the most important information in the entire game, which is to turn the lights up, because I've got a light right behind my TV. That's the kitchen. And I didn't have that on. And I thought I was going to have, like, the worst migraine I've ever had in my life. Then I turned that on. I was like,
because
thank
of the
you.
Frame rate.
I don't know if it was the frame rate or the colors or what, but man, that game assaults your senses.
Maybe I didn't
don't look directly into the light.
I thought he told me.
Yes, when you first turn the game on, he tells you to turn the lights on, otherwise you'll hurt your eyes. And then you get a trophy.
For Albania. Yeah, you want to talk about trophies, Sean, in the game?
Yeah, you get 3 just for turning the game on, and then you don't get any ever again.
The rest must be platinum or something, yeah.
Yeah, at least that was my experience with it.
Yeah, I got one later on for doing something, but one or two later on. But yeah, they get pretty tight-fisted with the trophies.
I just thought it was funny that you literally get 3 trophies before you ever push a button. And then
I don't necessarily like that. It's like,
I hate that. I think it's so dumb.
Make me do something. It's like you just bought the game, and you know, here's your reward for buying it.
Yeah.
I have achievement points. Oh wait a minute, bronze. Platinum, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever trophy.
What else you been playing, Sean?
I've been playing a lot of MotorStorm RC.
You're probably kicking my ass all over the...
I am. Well, I haven't updated it in a while. Last time I updated it, you'd only done like 3 races. And yeah, I'd already beaten you before I even knew you had the game. So
I played maybe 10, and I think I got stuck on one. I was trying to beat a listener of the show, Jeremy Lamont's record on one time, and every time I was down by about a half second.
Yeah, I hate that. I
finally beat him, and after that I didn't want to play the game much for a few days.
I just got my 100th coin today, and it was one of those things that I kind of decided I'm going to platinum this one.
Wow.
So I'm looking at all the trophies, and I'm like, a lot of these don't make sense. Like, they're asking me to finish... you know, certain things in certain times that don't exist. Like, there are these events that don't exist. So I had to go look it up, and apparently you have to earn 144 coins, and then all of a sudden a whole bunch of new events pop up, which is also why I couldn't earn the... I was like, there's a trophy for getting all the coins in one festival and then completing it in under 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I'm way under 10 minutes. Why didn't I get this trophy? And like, because there's still an event that's not there. But that apparently only takes 14
That's a hell of
seconds.
A lot of content for free.
Yeah.
What was the deal with that anyways? I heard it was free, but that was about it.
Free, sponsored by Scion for the Vita version. The PlayStation 3 version was $6-$7.
Yeah.
But, you know, once you have the free version, I wonder if anyone bought the PS3 version.
It doesn't make sense for a console, to be perfectly honest, because... Yeah. It's such a great game on the go. You know, a race can take 40 seconds, and, you know, the whole social aspect of it is really cool. You know, I love when I turn it on and Wi-Fi is in range, and all of a sudden, you know, one of my neighbors plays, and so all of a sudden I'll have all of her times updated, and then I can just race against her ghost. And I don't know, it's like, it's really super addictive.
Right.
I really love it. But I hate the standard races.
Speaking of that, one of my beefs with been playing some Wipeout 2048 is that it does, when you're within Wi-Fi range, it will show you the times. And so I'll see a number of my friends there with high times, and I want to beat that. But it doesn't save that. So when I'm offline, you know, when I'm commuting, I don't have a goal to try to beat.
Oh, that does suck.
And it's just such a minor thing. It's an otherwise great game, but I just wish. And the other thing is, you can view the times while the course is loading. And because it takes 35, 40 seconds to load, you know, you can kind of analyze the times and things like that. So,
yeah, and this, I don't think you can get the ghost if you're not within Wi-Fi range, but you get their times. So
I thought you grabbed the ghost. Don't you grab the ghost?
Well, here's the thing is I was home all weekend playing, and I, you know, I obviously had Wi-Fi, and I had ghosts all weekend, and on the bus this morning I didn't. So,
oh, okay, maybe not.
I'm just assuming either that they don't hold for very long, or you don't hold in general. But the times were all still updated, but the ghosts weren't. What I don't like is that I have a couple people on my friends list who are really active in playing it. And I like racing against them, but it also dumps a bunch of the, you know, top leaderboard scores in there. Mm-hmm. And it'll be like, somebody you don't know just beat your time on this. And it's like, no shit. I'm sure, you know, I'm in 4,000th place globally. I'm sure tons of people are beating my times. I don't really care about them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of, it kind of artificially eggs you on.
Yeah, and I don't really like that. I like it more when it's someone I know, yep. And I'm like, I'm going to beat your score.
Yeah, I wish you could kind of limit that, like go into the options screen and just limit it to like friends only.
Yeah, but Hotshots Golf, pay attention, because that's the shit you need to do to make your game. I'm serious. If I could do asynchronous multiplayer with Hotshots Golf, where like I get on the bus and it says, hey, you know, Robert finished this hole, you know, okay, mm-hmm. It's my turn now. And then when I'm on my way home, it'll say, hey, you finished the next hole. So it's, you know, just a really quick one hole of golf before I go do whatever other game that I have on there. That would be perfect. I would pay $1 billion for that, or at least, you know, full retail.
Or at least 40. That seems like it would be fairly easy to implement.
I think it's one of those things that someone had to do it first. Mm-hmm. And once, now that there's a really good social game on the Vita, we're going to get a flood of them. And I think it's a good thing.
That's cool. Anything else?
Street Fighter Cross Tekken. I reviewed that, and we had a lengthy discussion about DLC, like I always do.
I'm gonna bring it up. I promise I won't bring it up.
Good, because your high school economics teacher openly weeps for you.
Was that home economics?
What?
Was that home economics? Just kidding. Do they even offer that anymore?
They call it something else, and usually it's wrapped up with like you learn how to sew, and then you learn how to make CO2 powered cars so that they don't feel like they're being sexist.
Really? I when I took it, they integrated health, so you know it was like scrub your ass and making cookies, like brush your teeth twice a day.
Hopefully not at the same time.
Yeah, well, it gives it a little extra flavor. So one of the things I've been playing, Ridge Racer. Got in today. So one of the things, I'm not sure if you guys heard this, I was reading, I think it was Eurogamer, and they were talking about the original Ridge Racer, and they said that the drift mechanic was just amazingly economical code-wise. It only took up a few lines of programming. Did you guys ever hear that?
Can't say I did.
Supposedly, yeah, like just 5 lines. So to me, that's pretty amazing, and I think the only thing that trumps that is how Ridge Racer is still around today with really only visual changes. I mean, the gameplay is almost exactly the same. So, as I mentioned, I got it in today, and the first thing I did was play the pre-patch version. And this was the one that a lot of the European sites already reviewed because it came out there. And like the review said, the frame rate was really spotty. So, you know, with the patch installed, played a little bit more. And sure enough, it's Ridge Racer. It's a smooth Ridge Racer. It doesn't have nearly the bells and whistles of R4. But it's a game that really recalls, it's like a visually enhanced, but no Galaga during the load screen version of the original game. So for people that never played the title, it's this strange arcade racer that demands the skill set needed for a simulation. For me, Ridge Racer, I never really feel like I'm driving a car because the drift physics are just so wild. I mean, at one point in the game, I think of one of the first tracks, I take this jump and I'm drifting in the air. I'm turning, you know, my car perpendicular to the road, and I'm barely, you know, losing any speed when I land. But
it's like the car's on rails or like a roller coaster, except it tilts the car sideways.
But somehow when you play it, it makes sense. It's more this staunch simulation of a vehicle that doesn't exist. I know that's a paradox, you know, a simulation of something, but so is the game. So jumping right in, you get 6 tracks, you get 10 upgradable cars, you get in-game cash for every race, and the funny thing is, whether you win or lose, you get the same amount. And the game really encourages you. It really pushes you to grind. The first time you go against a ghost car, that's the option you choose. And this ghost car will kick your ass. I mean, doesn't make a mistake. And so you get 110 credits for every time. So after 4, you get nitrous. And then after a little while, you upgrade your car. And then you finally beat them. And I thought, oh, you know, the money's just going to rain down. Again, 110 credits, which is kind of weird. I don't know. It's kind of a strange game because there's really, almost like the last Gran Turismo, there's really not a structure. It's more of like a playground. And personally, I'd like to see a little bit of both in the game. You know, I'd like more of a structure, you know, races that are set up for you if you want
like
it.
In Ridge Racer 6 with the World Tour.
yeah, if you want that, that's there. If you don't, you know, here's your playground here.
Or you could have a literal playground like in Motorstorm RC.
Well, that's right.
That's free.
In the skateboard park there. So
that's it. Expands to become a basketball park and a soccer park.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. And so I don't know. I got to spend some more time with Ridge Racer. It feels a little bit empty. There's this team mechanic where you pick a team at the start, and I'm not sure you can change teams. And then you battle. Whenever you battle, you get a certain number of points, and your team goes up. But so far, the default team is like the clear and away winner, and of course, the one I didn't pick. So I picked the one that's in second place. And then just for being a part of the team, you get a certain amount of credits per day. But I don't really feel like I'm contributing to the team. If that makes sense.
Well, like the tech gaming team up top. No, that was mean, Sean, and untrue.
Okay. I don't know what you know what that meant.
I don't know. I just wanted to make a sick burn. It's been a long day.
Was it on me?
Yeah, but it really wouldn't. It would have applied if anybody else had said it but you.
Okay.
What was I going to say? Oh, you brought up the Galaga thing, the Galaga load screen.
Yeah, you know, because Namco owns the rights to that, right?
Yeah, they own the rights to that concept, which is why nobody else does it, which is completely bogus.
Okay, but I want Namco to do that for every damn game they put out.
I know, right?
Own the rights. Do it. No, the load times are pretty short, but hey, throw in Galaga because you own the rights, you know?
Yeah.
Can they license that out for cheap? Because that was a cool thing. I remember when I first saw that.
Technically, they could.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course they could. You know?
They had Pac-Man in Ridge Racer 6 for the loading screen, didn't they?
You know, no. It's Namco Bandai owns the rights for that. But, you know, what if for other Vita games? What if they license that out?
Yeah, I think that'd be great. Like, what if for Mega Man you could play...
Mega Man.
Insert classic Capcom arcade title here.
Mega Man Soccer.
1942,
thank you.
Yeah, there you go. So anyway, I was playing a little Yakuza Dead Souls, which I got in yesterday, pretty early, only a few chapters in, but I'm going to be a negative Nancy this week. I'm already seeing a few problems. So in Japan, handguns are illegal, and the fact that they're hard to come by has been articulated by the Yakuza franchise. So one of the things you do is you beat people silly with like pool cues, pylons, bicycles, whatever is laying around. So at the beginning of the game, the first two chapters, you're given this handgun to shoot zombies. Now, I don't have a problem with guns, you know, by my name. You guys probably know that. But I do have a problem with clumsy control schemes and Dead Souls really.
I wonder why.
Yeah. So when you're moving through hallways, there's always this feeling that a zombie might move around the corner. Maybe the camera just doesn't allow you to look around the corner and attack you before you can shoot them and finish them off. And the game, it tries to remedy that. You can kick a zombie with the O button. You know, you have the option to auto-aim. But to get this, the auto-aim used the L1 in combination of the left stick, the same stick that you move. So you know what that means. If you want
like
precision,
targeting.
Yeah, if you want precision, you either move or you shoot.
So basically, they're trying to remake the old Resident Evil games in Yakuza.
Yep. So in order to make things tense, you have that choice. So, I don't know, because Dead Souls has a little bit of that, oh shit, you know, it's intense because I don't have a handle on the feeling. It is fun, but it feels slightly antiquated.
Does it make sense within the world at all?
No, not really.
So do they just kind of go balls to the wall and be like, zombies?
Yeah, pretty much.
Do you think it's going to end in a dream sequence though, or like somebody slipped and hit their head in the bath on the bathtub or something, drink the zombies or some shit?
Yeah, one of the hostess girls spiked the drink or something. I don't know how they're going to incorporate. I think they're just going to look over it.
I don't know if this is a spoiler alert or anything, but you know they are developing a sequel to that one.
To which one?
There's going to be a Yakuza 5 and a Yakuza Dead Souls 2.
It just feels like I'm totally drawing a blank. Capcom's Zombies in the Shopping Mall. How the hell?
Oh,
Dead Rising?
Dead Rising, yeah.
I was going to say Dead to Rights. Different game.
The one without the dog. But anyway, in spite of the controls, I'm having fun with it. There's still that good amount of side stuff to do and find, and that's always been one of my favorite, you know, kind of parts of the series. You don't have to worry about ammo, which is really cool and makes it unlike Resident Evil, which kind of bothers me. But for me, this time, all the side stuff really outweighs the main game. It doesn't complement it, so that feels a little bit off. But like I said, I'm having fun with it despite it being really clunky.
So. I was super concerned when that game came out, and I think I'm just going to skip it.
Mm, yeah.
I love the Yakuza games. I have not been... Yeah.
This will break your heart.
Yet. Yeah, that's kind of where I thought
it. Step on it and beat it over the head with a bicycle.
Like, when they announced it, it was like, I cannot imagine a way that they could disappoint me more. Yeah. I would have been happier with Yakuza in space.
Maybe Yakuza zombie Nazis or something?
Yeah, that might have been... No, you know what? That might have been so goofy that...
I like the way Sage was... She said, oh, they're great, they're zombies. Too bad there's no Nazis in it.
It's just like, as soon as I realized it was coming out in the States, it threw me back to that Majesco guy. Zombies make everything better. No. No, they don't.
Zombie Super Mario Brothers.
You should have bit him on the arm right there. Really? Arr. That was kind of a pirate arc. But anyway, MLB The Show 12. So I bought MLB The Show 12 for PS3 and for Vita, which was $70. They took the, you know, they used the coupon. I didn't have any problems with it. It brought the price of MLB The Show for Vita down to $10, which is about how much I'd probably pay for it. it's billed as everything its big PS3 brother is, and I haven't played the PS3 version of the show, and if the Vita version is any indication, I'll stick with my patched copy of MLB 2K12. I was talking with Shipwreck about this, and he was kind of the first person I saw that reported the show for Vita is kind of a big glitchy mess right now. Balls fall in front of the plate or behind it, and the game just stops. The frame rate is a bit all over the place for batter intros. Just feels off. A little bit of a rush job. On the positive, the game gives players just a shit ton of control options. You can pitch by throwing your throw by just a button. There's this thing called pulse pitching, which even though I spent probably a half hour, I still didn't figure out. There's an analog-based system. I mean, there's sliders for a myriad of different challenge settings. You can really tweak the show to your liking. So for those interested in baseball, I'm going to say wait and see if there's a patch to fix things. Otherwise, wait for the show 13. And going back to MLB 2K12, which I reviewed this week, was really amazing. There was a patch for that and really changed the game almost completely. It was horrendous before, and it's actually kind of fun. Last thing I want to touch on is, you guys ready to touch my Katamari?
Nope.
Wouldn't touch it.
My type of interest, thank you very much.
All right. Well, you guys know I'm a big Katamari fan, so I couldn't resist the Vita version. And the critics so far, from what I've seen, they kind of nailed the game for having only 12 levels. But for me, the problem, and I don't think that's a problem. It may be for $30 or whatever. The problem is the levels themselves are a bit too linear. And by that, I meant, like, you go back to the first PS2 games, and they allowed you for a little bit more flexibility. They offered, you know, more items than you could possibly ever pick up in the allotted time frame. So you had to make choices. Do I hang out over here? Do I pick up these little coins and, you know, trash over here? Or do I grow my Katamari and you know, with little things, and then move over here and search for, you know, the small items that I could pick up in that particular zone? But with Touch My Katamari, I ended up picking about 90% of the junk in each level. And then there's not much, you know, indecision on whether you should stay there or leave to that newly opened area. By the time that opens, you know, you've picked up most of the big stuff. There's the possibility of kind of coming back later for a quick sweep, but it just doesn't feel worth it a lot of the time. And so I'm not sure if it's a limitation of the system, whether it's the levels themselves, draw distance or what, but it just feels kind of limiting. And not like a true Katamari experience. Now, graphically it is, but I don't know. It didn't feel the same for me.
And the music in it.
Music's fine. Wacky as always. Not my favorite. I think actually the first and second one had some of my favorite music. Which one had the Hansel and Gretel stage?
Second game.
That's probably one of my favorite Katamari stages, just because it was so, you know, it was based on something in reality. You dismantle that gingerbread house. I thought that was really creative. The other thing was there's a little bit of grinding, just like Ridge Racer, so players kind of go through the same levels over and over. And I'm seeing a trend in some of these Vita games where you're encouraged to go through the level so many times that it's almost like aversion therapy. You don't want to pick up the game again, you know? Where it's like, okay, I've been through this level 5 times. Like, I'm just going to pull the cartridge out of my Vita and play something else now because I don't want to look at it.
AKA the Earth Defense Force effect.
Yes. God damn you, bugs. I already killed you. Stay dead, motherfuckers. Yes. So that's all. What about you, Blue?
Well, speaking of Earth Defense Force, I've been going absolutely crazy because I need just one last weapon, one randomly dropped super rare last weapon to get the last achievement in the game, and then I'm done. I'm out. 200 hours. $27 well spent. But, oh, come on, just drop the damn thing already!
What weapon is it? Do you know?
It's the Lysander Z. It's like the best sniper rifle in the game. I mean, I beat the game on easy, normal, hard, hardest, and Inferno. I've beaten the entire game 5 times, front to back. Probably
how many bugs
more
do you think you killed altogether?
Oh, gotta be a million. Gotta be a million.
That's bug genocide. I have a custom Commander Lysander. I gave him a different shield, and I painted him different, and I got a special hammer. It's different than the one he comes with. It's pretty cool.
Huh? Apples and oranges, Sean. What the hell are you talking about?
That was a Warhammer.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I mean, I crossed over the 200 hours played mark with Earth Defense Force, and I've been done with the main campaign for, I'd say at least 50 hours. The rest of it has just been grinding and grinding and grinding, trying to get the one last weapon to get the last achievement so I can finally say, I'm done. I'm done. I'm finished. I can finally put it away. But the thing was, it's like I actually found I needed two. I had two weapons that I needed to get, and one of them randomly dropped this week. So now I'm down to one, and I've been replaying stages over and over and over again. And I have the genocide gun, which is the Inferno difficulty reward, which basically does a million damage if. If there's like an ant or a robot or anything walking around and you fire it, it's got such a huge blast radius that it will destroy everything in its path. Right. But the problem is, and I'm not sure if this was intentional or if it was a design glitch with it, is that you can't use it on the UFOs that spawn the ants and stuff like that. You can't use it on the unlike the mothership or the super weapon for the mothership. And it's just, I mean, that had to have been a glitch. I mean, you can't make a weapon that's like this powerful, destroys everything in its path, but when you shoot it at a UFO, it does nothing. It had to have been a glitch or a design flaw or whatever. And it drives me nuts because it's like, it's supposed to be your reward for playing through this balls tough game through, 5 times through, because you can't just go straight into Inferno. You need to beat and grind through easy, beat and grind through normal, and all your way up. Because the way they do the damage in EDF is, basically when you go up to a different level, it's like the damage the acid pissing ants do is like increased from like, say, like 40 damage to 600 damage or something like that.
I got a question for you, Blue. As much as you hate DLC, how much would you pay for that last gun?
I have Let's see. I have
G3,
about,
are you listening?
I think I have like 100 Microsoft points left. It's like, and I can use that dollar to buy like the Macho Man for WWE 12. And that last 20 points, it's like, it's a quarter. I don't know how the hell I'm ever going to spend that thing if I don't just buy something completely stupid that is purposefully priced to be a quarter. And if they had that gun for a quarter, yeah, I'd probably sell out.
So a quarter. Okay.
Yeah, I'd buy that for a quarter. I also buy a Coldplay album for a quarter, even though it's Coldplay.
Right. Or a Major Nelson picture. I'm not sure how much retail is on those.
The next thing I've been messing around with, and I just picked this up today, so I haven't spent a hell of a lot of time with it, is I found a boxed, or, you know, an open box, never used, styrofoam still on it, manual still stuck in the box, everything is just, it's open box, but it's new. And it is the original wireless racing wheel, not the one with the weighted center that came out with alongside Forza 4, but the one that was out around the time Forza 2 and Project Gotham 4 were the big racing games.
Right.
And I found it open box, $20, and I had to have it. It's like, okay, I love Forza 4. A racing wheel and foot pedals will make Forza 4 super Forza 4. And I've set it up. I've messed around with it a bit. It's got force feedback, so, you know, if you're the car will fight you, you know, if you're trying to turn it away, it really shouldn't go. Mm-hmm. But my problem with it, I'm experimenting with some of the advanced settings for the wheel.
Sure.
But it could be fine tuning. It could be me just needing to get over the, you know, get over the learner's curve for the wheel or what. Mm-hmm. But it's like, I've gone from quasi-competent in Forza 4 to I'm spinning out on, like, Indianapolis, where it's just a rectangle. It's like, I'm having so much trouble actually.
Well, it's like actually a completely different game once you add the wheel.
Yeah, it's
Sean, do you remember when we saw F1 at E3 last year and they said somebody step up and try the wheel, and I drove like I was just completely drunk.
Yeah, although that was a touchy game anyway.
Yeah, it's a touchy game, but you're in a cockpit. You're in this expensive cockpit with wheel, and it was like a stick shift and everything. And oh my god, I was all over the place. I was like happy I was doing 35 around a corner.
That's exactly how I feel. It's like with the wheel, it's like you have to relearn how to walk, but in Forza 4 terms. And $20, I don't think I'm gonna regret getting it at that price, but I'm not as bowled over with it as I thought it was gonna be.
All right. Was it used at all? You mentioned it was still in styrofoam.
No, it doesn't look like it. Everything, you know, they had some foam around the steering wheel, and that was still completely taped on. The box was in rough shape. It looked like, you know, maybe something, you know, got spilled on it, or, you know, spilled on the box. There's a little bit of, you know, just like
vomit.
Yeah, there's like a little piece of corn stuck in the 360 guide button, you know, and but you know, I mean, it just had a, I mean, there was like just a little bit of, just like a residue or something. It's not that, not like a
was it
sticky,
salty?
Not tastes like chicken. I mean, it was just like a little bit of like a residue from, you know, some, you know, water, little bit of dirty water. It was just stuck, just a little bit on, you know, the plastic. It didn't spill into the controller or anything.
Gotcha.
And I mean, I just took like a, you know, it's a damn paper towel. It came up in just one swipe. So, I mean, it's practically new. Mm-hmm. And
I was saying to you earlier that those steering wheels, no matter what system, they have the worst retention rate. I mean, because they take up so much space they have such a niche audience that as soon as you take it out of the box, it plummets in value.
Yeah, I remember that Best Buy had it. It was like normally $150, and I think they had it on sale for 50 or something like that, and I was this close to getting it because I'm thinking, oh god, I've loved Project Gotham Racing 3. Gotham Racing 3 with a wheel. Oh, that's going to be perfect. And I actually ended up deciding against it, and now that I'm got it for 20, I think I'm glad I only spent 20 on it. I mean, I'll probably get over that hump soon enough, but I'm still having trouble just going around the track, and I've put in about 100 hours into Forza 4, so I mean I should be able to get at least around the Autumn Ring easy speedway course or whatever.
Sure.
And it's just I'm spinning out like crazy.
Now, how much resistance does the wheel give you? Because I feel like when you're going that fast, you need more resistance to kind of keep you from turning the wheel too far.
It gives you a pretty decent. It's a pretty decent amount of resistance. You know, I haven't. You have to really muscle it to make like a sharp turn of the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
I actually ended up turning the force feedback off because I was finding it too distracting. You know, it's like it's tough enough getting the wheel. Right. You know, steering the car with the wheel going normally, but with the force feedback, it's just 10 times worse. I was screwing up left and right.
Too bad they never made Big Mother Truckers for the 360.
Big Mother?
That would have been an awesome combo, wouldn't it?
Hey, you never know. That could be an HD remake.
Yeah. I have never played one of the Big Mother Truckers games. You guys?
What about the Big Rig games, the 18-wheeler?
I might have.
Yeah. I played that in the arcade once or twice, and that was pretty fun. I think they have it at a local arcade, but you can't turn the truck to the right or something like that, so you have to
crash into the wall.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to tell you, that wheel also makes me really appreciate NASCAR. It's like I've never
in Tennessee really they combine NASCAR with trucks.
They've already done that. They have racing trucks.
Yeah,
I drive a Hulk Hogan racing truck in Forza. I love that thing.
Yeah,
it's on the marketplace. Get that truck. It is awesome. This wheel has never made me appreciate NASCAR more than anything else. It's making four left turns in a row without dying. That it's like I can't imagine doing that for 500 miles at like 200 miles an hour. I have a newfound respect for NASCAR. I'll still wish it has right turns in it, but yeah, NASCAR thumbs up.
Oh, awesome.
And I mean that's about it. I mean I went back to Skyrim and I had a wonderful experience that involved luring two giants down a hill and using the Thuum to shoot them. Huh?
That sounds really dirty. I'm sorry. Wow.
Yeah, I lured these two giants off of a hill.
Oh, awful.
I managed to get them just close enough to the edge and position myself between the edge and them. Right. And I used the Thuum to shoot both of them off of a cliff. And there is something so satisfying about that. It's almost creepy. It's, you know, here are these ginormous guys that want to that like take 3/4 of your health away with like one hit.
Mm-hmm.
And I shout at them and they fly off a cliff and die.
Nice.
Oh, Skyrim, you are such a wonderful, wonderful little game.
Did any of you guys play Mass Effect 3?
I've been avoiding it. I actually have the 1 hour demo on my hard drive.
Okay.
But I don't want to open it up until I finish Mass Effect 2, which I was trying to do last night, but somebody had to remind me that I had responsibilities.
Sorry. One of my buddies called me and said, hey, I'm going to have sex with a Chobot right now. Check it out.
Yeah, I actually worked really hard trying to avoid any Mass Effect spoilers. Mm-hmm. And I never really appreciated how great it is to not care about something and then decide to play it later on until I played Mass Effect 2. Mm-hmm. Because there were so many people trying to spoil Mass Effect 2 stuff when that came out. And it was like, right. I don't care because I have zero interest in that game. And now that I'm playing it and all those things just completely escaped from my mind because I didn't understand them at the time. I didn't know what Cerberus was. I didn't know what, you know, collectors were or anything like that. So now that Mass Effect 3 is out and I don't want to know anything about it and everybody's just like cramming it down my throat, I'm like, shut up.
Yeah, you should pick up Heavy Rain too.
I should, because I don't... Well, talk about that. The problem with Heavy Rain is I know who did it, and I remember who did it, because I played the demo, and then as soon as the demo came out, everyone's like, that guy did it!
No. Take the blue pill, forget it. Speaking of pills, you guys ready for some trivia?
Yes, indeedy.
Alright. Number one, this week sees the release of FIFA, or FIFA, like says, Street, a reboot of EA's Street Soccer series. Beyond trying to score in Amsterdam or on the beaches of Rio de Janeiro, players will also be able to play a little bit of Nutmeg. So what are the rules to this test of skills? Get it? Test of skills? Sounds like Popeye saying something else. Never mind. A, dribble your ball between your opponent's legs and back again. B, players stand 50 feet away from each other and try to kick the ball at another person's groin. C, players are able to catch the ball between their legs. Or D, it's a two-on-two game where the goal is to kick the ball through a player's legs.
I think D.
I'm going to go with D.
Correct answer. You got to dribble your ball between your opponent's legs and back again.
Dagnabbit.
Know your nutmeg. Number two. This week, Ultimate Ninja Storm Generations promises to grab the attention of aspiring Hokages everywhere. Developer Cyber Connect 2 has warmed our hearts before, creating all of the following games except one. Name it. Tail Concerto, A. B. Solo to Robo, C. Silent Bomber, or D. Endless Ocean 2, Adventures of the Deep.
C.
I'll go with Solo to Robo.
Correct answer, Endless Ocean 2, Adventure to the Deep.
Oh, crap. I played that, too.
Yeah. That one was...
I liked it.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool game. Number three this week, P. Walter Tugnut will make his debut in the release of Shoot All Robots. Just how did the developers describe Mr. Tugnut? Is he a psychopathic gun collector who imagines that all the world's computer systems have become self-cognition? B, B, a lovable hillbilly who's been stockpiling his RVs with guns and ammo for the robot apocalypse?
That's blue.
C, second to last hope standing between mankind and a cyber-kinetic takeover? That's you, John.
That's me.
And D, an unemployed down-on-his-luck bounty hunter who, tired of collecting cans to recycle, decides to go after bigger game in Boston.
And that's Sage, so... I'm going to guess it's A.
Okay.
No, B.
I'll say Sage. Say B. I'll say Sage.
Okay, so the lovable hillbilly?
No, I think that was D. What?
They're all kind of down your luck rednecks, aren't they?
Yeah, I'm saying it's B, and he's saying it's D.
Okay, correct answer. B, lovable hillbilly. Sean's in the lead with one. Okay, number four. Listen up, guys. I Hate Everything About You is more than just a mean-spirited admission. It's also the name of new DLC song made available to Rock Band 3 owners this week. Name the artist. A, Breaking Benjamin. B, Linkin Park. C, 3 Days Grace. D, Seether. Or E, It's My Personal Song to Jimmy Buffett.
He wouldn't put that in Rock Band. I'm going to say Linkin Park. Why not?
I think it's 3 Days Grace.
Ah, Blue got it. Oliver tied it up. 3 Days Grace. Correct answer.
Speaking of music, I went to an antique store the other day, and they had a hat that from the crew member of Spice World, and it was it was hanging on top of a Sailor Moon children's backpack. So I thought of you.
Oh, my God. Why did you not take a picture?
I tried to. It just didn't come out very well.
That's cool. Wow. I didn't think those two worlds intersected. Except
it's actually a really cool store. They got all kinds of old toys and stuff. But
where is this place? Tell me.
It's in Westminster. Okay. It's actually in the mall in Westminster.
Oh, wow. In the mall. Okay. Number five, last question. Although it might look like the inaugural title from an unproven upstart, the developers of Reality Fighters have another Sony title on their resumes. Name it. A, Air Conflict's Aces of World War II. B, Invisibles. C, The Con. D, Winx Club, Join the Club. Or E, Cub Club, Club the Club, Clubber.
I want to say it's Invisibles, but I also want to say C is true. But I mean, I'm going to stick with Invisibles just because I love that game. Well, love is a strong word. Maybe
did you buy the sequel?
I didn't, because the sequel
sucked.
No, it came out here. Did it come out here late? I don't know. There was something weird happened with the sequel that I didn't get.
It was an invisible release.
Isn't that the one with the camera bundle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
I'll go with Invisibles too.
Correct answer. The Invisibles.
Yeah. Yay! That was an interesting concept for a game, and it was not bad.
Are you going to buy Reality Fighters?
No. Yeah. I don't really.
Smart move.
I've heard good things about it, but
so
I don't.
Have I, but it just looks stupid.
Yeah.
I don't know. I want a game where people have already made fighters and I don't have to, put my face on one.
Yeah. Kind of like Fighter Maker.
I'm also waiting for a good AR game. I know the technology is there.
Did you
play
any of the three?
I played Cliff Jumper.
And what does that entail?
Jumping off of cliffs.
Really?
Yeah.
Without hurting yourself?
Well, it's cliff diving, sorry. Okay. So jumping off cliffs into water, and then like every once in a while there will be like a ring or something, and you have to time your button presses with the rings. But the problem was the first couple cliffs, it teaches you something new at every one. Mm-hmm. And I got to this one, and I accidentally skipped the tutorial and could not figure out how to re-watch the tutorial.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do here. Guess this is the last time I'll ever play this game.
I have not played the games, only because I'm too lazy to break open the seal of my AR cards, I guess.
I didn't even know that it came with AR cards until I downloaded the free game and it said, pull out your AR cards. And I was like, I better go find the box because I already put the box away.
Speaking of AR cards, if you go through Club Nintendo or on Nintendo's official website, you can get 3 free augmented reality cards for Kid Icarus Uprising. Apparently, it's like. Did you get yours?
Oh, no, I didn't. I could not care any less about Kid Icarus, but I saw them online.
It's a shooter, Sean.
It's free.
I played a little bit. It wasn't bad.
The voice acting in the anime trailers that have been on the 3DS Nintendo video channel or whatever.
Right. How much voice acting will be in the game, though?
But for Blue to say that,
it's like Chaos Wars 2.
I mean, if he can suffer through that much Sailor Moon, it's got to be...
Hey, first season's cast was good.
Okay, and the rest of them?
Even I didn't like the third season's cast that much.
See? So if that's our...
Benchmark,
this has got to be terrible. I am Kid Icarus. I am going to shoot you with my lasers.
He's got lasers? Yeah. Just thought he had arrows, bows and arrows. I think it's time for a Blue bonus question.
Yes, indeedy. And recently, I've been watching a lot. That doesn't really properly describe it. I've been watching an episode or two every night or so on Netflix of the Saturday morning Sonic the Hedgehog cartoon from 1993 or 1992.
Adventures of Sonic the Hedgehog or Sat-Am?
It's Sat-Am.
Okay. Sean's already going to nail this question if he knows two shows.
The answer is Urkel.
Actually, a Jaleel White question would have been too easy. And he is going to be on Dancing with the Stars this season.
Mm-hmm.
don't get me started on reality TV. That's up there with fucking Jimmy Buffett. Shit.
I hate reality TV too, except for like American Pickers and Dancing with the Stars, and mostly that's because you need to watch it and see some of the outfits that some of the ladies wear.
Let me tell you, okay, that show is on ABC, and it's just a way for them to plug their Disney stars and their ABC mm-hmm. has-beens.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's nothing but an advertisement. The fact mm-hmm. that people watch that, yeah, you're like, uh-huh.
Yeah.
The fact that people watch that drive me nuts. No end.
Yeah, like those Naruto games that we review are no different than that. You realize that, right?
I haven't played one recently.
I'm just saying.
How...
Anyway, we had a question here about something important.
Yeah, something important.
But Urkel isn't in Naruto.
Should be.
That'd be some good voice acting.
Believe
Got
it.
Got juice! actually, this important question surrounds who... What, where is the name of Sonic's pet dog? in the Sonic the Hedgehog Saturday morning cartoon and the Archie comics. Oh, that's mean. Did you just call her a bitch? I mean, I know she's annoying, but damn! No, but what is the name of Sonic the Hedgehog's pet dog in the Saturday morning cartoon and the Archie comics? Is it A, Bow Wowser? A little nod to Nintendo's lead antagonist. B, Mutsky.
Yeah, that one.
C, Chili the dog. Oh, or D,
that's like chili dogs.
Dash.
No.
I think it's Mutsky.
Yeah, Mutsky.
I'm pretty sure it's Mutsky.
Damn it, it's Mutsky.
Yeah. I've only seen a few episodes.
Yeah, and the thing with that is, like, I never remembered that they experimented with the production style of that show after, like, the first season or first 13 episodes. It's like, episode 14 has, like, all the character colors are completely different, and then episode after that, the characters have kind of reverted back to the character colors of the first 13 episodes, but they've been modified a little bit. Like, Sally now has a vest, and Bunny's colors are still a little bit off. I never remembered that part of.
Well, they changed studios after the first season, and then it's also when they changed the comic. Because if you read the comics back then, and I really hate outing myself for having read the comics, but the comics, like, starting with issue zero, were actually following the other cartoon, Adventures of Sonic the Hedgehog. So it was very, you know, campy, and, you know, one issue would be like three short vignettes about cooking eggs or, you know, buying a gift for Tails or whatever. And then they switched over to follow Sat-Am, and when that happened, they switched studios for the show, and they had sort of a unified vision for it, and then the show got canceled.
Wow. Sean, that's amazing. I can blow your mind even more.
Okay.
We got a question coming up from Phil Fish. Phil Fish was the name of Abe Vigoda's character on Barney Miller, and Abe Vigoda's real-life dad drew for the Archies. The Archies comic. Yeah.
6 degrees of separation.
I blew your mind, didn't I?
I wonder if the million moms realize that there have been gay characters in Sonic yet.
Which ones were gay? Oh.
I think there's an openly gay one now, but what was the walrus? Rotor was supposed to be gay.
Really? Huh?
Yeah.
I never knew that.
Yeah.
What was the sun and signifier that he was gay?
There's an article you can read about it. One of the original creators talks about how they laid the groundwork for it, and then when they got laid off, they went back, and you can actually go and see where they kind of started to imply it.
Okay. Curious. That's cool.
I still can't get over that a hedgehog made a baby with a squirrel.
It happens. Wait, isn't Sally a squirrel?
Yeah.
Or a chipmunk?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Anyway, this is getting weird now, and I kind of hate to have these conversations.
Furries.
Yeah, you guys are weirding me out. Time to hit the mailbag. We got a question from Poison Prince. So what do you guys think? What do you think of Phil Fish's message, your games just suck, message given to a developer in parentheses who is praising American indies for picking up retro Japanese themes? So the big Phil Fish hubbub, Sean, your thoughts?
Yeah.
You said, now, Sean, I was going to throw this question out, but you said Phil Fish said something recently to kind of...
Yeah, said something this morning, and I'm trying to figure out what it was. But I saw something on Twitter about it. Now I completely lost it.
Can I just say in the meantime that I don't give a shit about Phil Fish, and I think he's just fishing for publicity?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that his game has been... Oh, yeah, that's what it was. He was yelling at Game Informer or something like that.
He was yelling at the magazine?
Yeah.
Like on the bus riding somewhere?
Pretty much. No, yeah. on Twitter, I think it was.
Was he using all caps?
Yeah, actually, I'm looking at it right now. Hey, assholes, you enjoy the never shipped anything bullshit while you can, which is... which, by the way, is bullshit. I worked on four games in my 3 years in the industry. in Design 2 with Kokorami, which would make Fez my seventh game I've worked on, blah, 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 blah. He's basically getting into Twitter fights with people.
Yeah, I saw that. He told... Well, I won't.
Oh, Alex Navarro. He's told Alex Navarro, what exactly have you shipped, Alex, and testing doesn't count. So basically, he's now calling out everybody, and you could be very right. He could just be fishing for publicity.
Yeah, but he's doing a good job, because until GDC, I didn't know who the hell this guy was. I honestly never heard of Fez. You guys?
I had heard of Fez, but I thought it at least like 2 or 3 years ago.
Right, right.
It's one of those things where you heard some good things about it, like during like a podcast like 2 years ago.
I mean, I've actually GDC played it.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah, because they have it at IndieCade, and it's one of those things.
Do we
that...
talk to Phil Fish? We probably did.
It's possible.
Yeah.
I don't recognize him from the pictures.
Was this a good game?
It was an interesting game. Okay. But it's one of those things that it was one of those things we played it the first time I was at, I think it was E3 that we saw it. And then it was there every time after that, and it was sort of, I lost interest in it. I mean, I know it's right. different for the people at home that, you know, they've been waiting for this for years, but when you see it so many times, and it's such a simple concept, the idea that it's been in development this long just blows my mind.
Well, I don't
know. Live up to the hype?
Yeah, I don't know if we can pick on him for that, because...
Well, I'm not necessarily picking on him, but I think that it's going to be one of those games that people boot up and then play for a little while and forget, and for such a build-up over so many years, it's kind of depressing.
It's a little bit of the Duke Nukem syndrome.
Kind of. Yeah. Well, no, because I still think this game's going to be of high quality. I just think it's a platformer, and like I said before, I don't think platformers hold people's attention for long periods of time.
So he's basically saying Japanese developers suck, even though they made the platformer. They invented the platformer.
Pretty much.
Interesting.
I mean, and I think his style, since he's shown it so much, has been copped by so many people that it doesn't seem fresh anymore.
Like, what do you mean the style? The style of the game?
This sort of pixelated... art style that works on multiple levels, and it wraps around these 3D environments, and it's been done since he showed that the first time. So like looking at it now, it doesn't seem very revolutionary or even particularly fresh, even though it really was when he first unveiled the concept. It's just, I don't know, I feel like people are gonna look at it and then say meh, play it, forget it.
It's kind of is it kind of like a 3D Dot Hero or something along those lines?
It's like 2D sprites, you know, it's 2D platformer on a 3D plane that you can turn and flip.
Blue, 3D Dot Heroes was a Japanese game. Phil Fish hates Japanese games, so it's nothing like that. Okay, we got another question from Ray Trace. With the new generation of consoles coming, what were the big software game-based innovations this gen? How will the 360 and PS3 be remembered?
Trophies in achievements, because they completely changed how people play games. Because even if you're not,
did you see the hell that was going on yesterday with the gamer scores getting wiped out?
The only hell I saw was you telling them not to log on to their Xbox.
Telling screw you, Major Nelson and Phil Fish too.
Well, I saw you tweet something, and then literally the next tweet on my Twitter feed was something from Microsoft saying they had fixed the issue, and then a bunch more tweets for the rest of the day, you telling people not to log on to their Xbox.
Blue
Swim. Don't believe the hype.
I mean, I gotta tell you, I mean, could you really, as much as I give it hell, and much as I think it's, you know, evil, death of the industry, yada, yada, yada. I mean, I guess, wouldn't you say DLC?
Sure.
I mean, I know they had DLC on the original Xbox, but it's like, it really...
As a viable distribution method, definitely.
Yeah, yeah, this is the first time it really has been. I mean, they had DLC on the Dreamcast, but it was never really viable. Part of it is just, this is the first time we've had...
I really think with the Vita, almost every game you can buy.
That's the plan. Every game's supposed to be day and date on the store.
Now, my question, wasn't every game supposed to be marked down 10%?
It is.
No. Check out.
Well, that's not 10%. I think it might be 5%.
Well, whatever it is, check out the retail price on Harry Potter.
Really?
$39.99. It's not marked down at all. Actually, I was looking, there are a few titles that weren't.
Technically, it's up to the publishers to decide that. I think they just heavily implied that that's supposed to be the way it is. But, I mean, they can charge double for the download version if they want. They're just not going to make any money that way.
Sure.
Is 10% off enough for that? Enough of a discount, though? I mean, it's...
It's getting people to purchase, and I think the ability to not have to carry around your cartridges and to have that on your 16 gig or 32 gig memory card, I think that's an incentive as well.
That's kind of the problem that I have with the digital distribution on a portable platform is that, you know, I mean, especially with like the Vita, where your maximum capacity is like 32 gigs, so you're not going to get a hell of a lot of games on there. You know,
well, the other
sort of thing where
you can't really go
all digital, right. Or otherwise you're going to have to be, you know, deleting something, then re-downloading it. And the other thing
you got to factor in right now, gas is almost $5 a gallon. By the time you actually drive to the GameStop, pick it up, then you get an empty case with just a little insert for the Vita box, not much at all. You know, by the time, you know, you're spending gas for what? For a little shell? I don't know. I'd just as soon download it.
Yeah, and 32 gigs, you'll get a lot of games on there. I mean, because on my PSP Go, that's only 8 gigs, and I had a large library on that, and I never really felt like, oh, man, there's tons of games that I need to have that I wouldn't have thought to put in there anyway. You know, it's not any less trouble for me to fill it up with a couple games that I might want to play in the recent future than it is to throw a bunch of games in a bag. And, I mean, 32 gigs is a lot. I've got a 4 gig card in mine, and I've got 3 games in there.
I got a 16. I got at least 4 or 5 games, a bunch of PSP games, and a couple of videos.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, why bother? I mean, why would I want to have to? Okay, I've got all these games in my bag that are physical games. I got to pop out the cartridge, put it in, wait for it to reinstall, and then.
Right. And I'm not sure about you, but I really think the first thing to go on my Vita is going to be that little door. For the cartridge bay.
Yep.
Like, that thing is held on by really 2 pieces of rubber.
Yep.
And I'm really thinking the third party people, what's their name? Mad Cats. Come on, make a replacement door. Get on it, guys. Because those things are going to break. I'm putting my money on it.
Make a fight stick for the Vita as well.
No, it handles stick. It handles its own. It's perfect for fighting games.
I enjoy Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom.
Yeah,
more on the Vita than I did on the PS3.
Yep.
Something about having a fighting game or something like that on the go that just feels like a match made in heaven. You know, yep. It's like I carry Tekken 6 around with me almost everywhere I go.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep.
So, like Linus in his blanket, that's blue. So
DLC. You know. That's what we're gonna remember this for.
I also think it really, even though open world games were around the last generation, I really think that this new generation allowed you to create an immersive world. And I'm thinking,
I think the difference is open world was really a PS2 thing, mm-hmm. but open universe, I guess,
yeah.
Okay. But, like, yeah. As campy as that is, but like. You had a lot of games like GTA in mm-hmm. PS2 that really defined that era, mm-hmm. but it wasn't like you didn't really have anything to do with that.
Right. And the AI was just rather, you know, it was functional. It was kind of doing its thing, and there was no kind of branching to it, or not much branching there. And this really kind of allows developers to really create a simulation of a world.
It's kind of like the difference between Grand Theft Auto 3 and Skyrim, really. I mean, yep. you look at the two, and I mean, Grand Theft Auto, you have this entire town and a lot of people in it and stuff like that. But I mean, yeah, it's like
they're all just
like
milling around the sidewalks,
yeah,
for you to bump into them, not doing anything.
Yeah, it's
and Skyrim, it's, they actually have jobs. You can follow them around before you kill them.
I mean, it's like you can just walk around in Skyrim and have a shit ton of adventures happen without even looking for it.
There you go. Back of the box quote. And speaking of quotes, if you'd like to compliment your listening with a bit of reading, might I suggest checking out our site, www.tech-gaming.com, for latest reviews, editorials, and weekly new releases. And if you'd like to follow us on Twitter, I am at tech_gaming. Sean is at Sean Nola, N-O-L-A. Sage is not with us here tonight, only in spirit, is at Samurage. And we got Ba-Ba-Ba Blue Swim at Blue Swim. Easy enough. So subscribe to us on... what is it, Eiffel 67, or what was there?
Eiffel 66 or 67, something like that, yeah.
Eiffel something.
You know what I love about having you on this podcast is that once per episode, you have to dash somebody else's taste in music, and then by the end of the episode, you have to remind everybody that you have terrible taste in music.
Oh, you need to see my music collection. We would have a lot of fun listening to it. I mean, I
want to see that. I want to see Sean and you sit down and listen to music.
Yeah, is this the royal we?
It literally.
What's the first thing you'd put on, Blue?
Banga Boys.
First thing I'd probably put on would be Songs of Freedom, the Bob Marley box set. I have eclectic taste in music. If it's good and possibly bad, I listen to it. It doesn't really matter what genre it's in. If it's good, I want to hear it. And I mean, I've scoured $1 scratched CD bins, and I've been through about like two MP3 players, and I'm working on a third as far as like
Coldplay and Nickelback. That's where you draw the line.
Well, actually,
Coldplay is not bad, Sean. We're gonna have to stick up for them.
I'm sticking up for them too. That's what I'm saying.
Their new stuff sucks. You can't sing to it.
So for a quarter that Milo Oxyloda,
the album title you can't pronounce. That was a brilliant move, guys.
I mean for a quarter it was on sale for like earlier or late last week. I mean that was worth it. I mean it's a quarter, but I mean there are a lot better albums out there. I mean the day before that was Lady Antebellum, and I mean, I'm not mega crazy about country, but I mean, that was a really good album, definitely worth a quarter.
Anyway, I didn't mean to go that far off on a tangent. Follow us on Facebook. Blues
Music Reviews coming soon. Tech Gaming.
Yeah. Anyway, I need to go.
Yes. Okay. Thanks, guys. See you in two.